Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
You know, Coach Kelly, I never know what's going to come out of my mouth right after I do that introduction.
What do you mean, good or bad?
Exactly.
I don't know. Exactly.
Like, what am I going to say? And exactly. What are you going to say? But of course, I know that all of our listeners are probably dying to know the update on the diarrhea and the vomiting.
I don't know if they're really dying to know.
Well, our listenership keeps growing. So apparently, this seems to be interesting, too.
Well, so does my son's diarrhea. It's still happening. It's now literally almost 2 months to the day. It's crazy. I don't know what to tell you. I called the GI today. We'll see. I don't know. We'll have to do blood work. I've been avoiding it like the Black Plague because I don't want him to have to sit there. I mean, he's like a beefy dude. Like, he's not like a, you know, sweet little 2-year-old who'll be like, okay, like, he's gonna need like restraint. Like, someone was like, maybe you should sedate him. I mean,
my goodness.
Yeah, he's pretty intense. So, but yeah, he's still going strong.
So,
but
he's not losing a bunch of weight.
He eats like a truck driver. I've never in my life seen like an almost 3-year-old eat as much as this guy does. It's like a grown man. Like, he has 8-course meals and then he wants like more. Like, I don't know. Maybe he doesn't have like a fullness cue. It's kind of crazy.
But do you think maybe he is eating more because he's discharging so much, so to speak?
He always ate a lot. Uh-huh. I think even as a little kid, but probably a little bit more because he's, you know, excreting everything out. Poor guy. So, I mean, but he's, you know, he's acting okay. And he's like, before he was kind of losing color a little bit, and now is, you know, he's fine. So it's not like I'm worried like something serious, mm-hmm. but I don't know why this is still happening. So, yeah, pretty
well,
crazy.
If anybody has some advice or information for yeah, Coach please. Kelly on diarrhea, please call us at 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. We love your emails. Keep sending them. Oh, my. So any other tidbits of...
So what I wanted to share, I wanted to ask you this, like totally off subject, but have you watched the series Friday Night Lights?
No.
Oh, my God. I'm obsessed.
Really?
David and I watch it, and there was this guy on there. I forget his real name because I don't care, because all I care about is what he looks like. He's so gorgeous. I cannot stop thinking about him. And my husband knows that if I ever meet him, like our marriage is in jeopardy. Like, I'm serious. He's so adorable. His name is Tim Riggins on the show. He's like this cute like football player. He's probably like, he's supposed to be like 18 on the show, but he's, you know, probably older. And that's been helping me get through a lot of diarrhea. That's all I have to say about that. So he's really cute. So that's been a good escape. Like, I feel like for me, my escapes are like good series, you know, good shows, right, just to kind of take me out.
You know, it's funny you should say that. I have become obsessed with a show called Cedar Cove.
Oh.
It is filmed in a little tiny area in... near Washington.
Okay.
Near Tacoma, Washington.
Yeah.
I guess it's called Port Orchard.
Okay.
And I guess there's an inn there called Cedar Cove Inn or something like that. Uh-huh. It's so beautiful. So even though it's kind of boring.
Yeah. But you like the...
Yeah. You know, I'm Andy McDowell.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like
so
her.
She's the lead in that. And I watch and I just go into the zone of... So now I'm already planning my trip to Port Orchard. I'm already looking
really?
Up all the B&Bs.
I could see you there.
Yeah. Kayaking and
that's
that
nice.
Sea and going whale watching. It's really close to Victoria Island.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, there's another one called Port Angeles. That's about another hour northwest from there. So it'll be an extension of my Alaska trip that I just did.
That'd be awesome.
Move over there. Yeah, so I've already got my 4 trips lined up for next year.
Oh, my God.
I just haven't made reservations. As Christopher says, uh-oh, are you on travel porn again?
I yes. love it.
Yes.
I it's so funny. I'm like... living vicariously through you. Like, all I want to do is like pack. Like, my neighbor asked me, he was like, you know, can you watch the house or whatever? And I was like, literally wrote him an email. I'm like, can I please come with you? Like, and there was a part of me that was like, serious, like, let me just come and be like the awkward third wheel, like in your party. Like, I just need to get away. And so I'm jealous. I think that's great.
Oh, poor Kelly. You need a week away by yourself with a book on a beach.
Yes. It sounds good.
Margarita in hand.
Exactly.
And just hanging out.
For now, I'll just deal with the fantasy of Tim Riggins.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. Well, we had a fabulous show last week. Oh, my, oh my gosh. And we're going to have an amazing show today.
Yes.
Quite a contrast. Last week was much more serious.
Yes.
Very, very intense.
Yeah.
And we had Dave Pelzer, the author of his memoir, A Child Called It, and then his new book, Too Close to Me. And he's just such a compassionate and forgiving man. God, amazing.
Oh my God.
To go
so
through
good.
Torture. I mean, his childhood was torture.
Yeah. Emotionally and physically abused.
He's such an example of turning adversity into strength, or my version, mm-hmm. chicken shit into chicken salad. He said, with a load of blue cheese, he'll eat anything.
But he was so sweet. He was like a gentle, sweet soul. And I feel like I just found the show so inspiring for me. It was just like, yeah, I mean, if anybody can kind of bounce back from that, I feel like you can bounce back from anything pretty much.
Absolutely.
It was incredible.
And such a good heart. And I really... It brought me back to my own personal story of having lost my mom, with us having a bad relationship toward the mm-hmm. end, and it was sudden, and she told me I was the worst daughter on the planet, and it, you know, broke my heart, because really I was trying to get her help, because I too understood that my mom had, you know, a fair share of mental mm-hmm. illness, along with being hugely narcissistic, which we're going to have some conversation about that a little later today. And so that whole thing of forgiveness, and to be able to just forgive somebody, whether they've even asked for forgiveness or not,
it was
very touching to see him talk about his mom in a way that was actually so loving and understanding of her in a context. Did you get that too?
I felt like he could completely compartmentalize it. Like, I don't even know how that's possible, you know, just to sort of say like, okay, that woman was sick. Like, yes, she was my mom, but she was really sick. You know, I feel like oftentimes it just bleeds together too much. You can't separate it, but he had a really, well, that's why I asked him a lot about his recovery. Like, I felt like he's, you know, he feels really healthy to me,
right,
given everything.
So on that note, another show about recovery. We have an awesome guest in studio today. Woo-hoo. We always love it when our guests are available to come sit with us and see us, so we can see them smile and laugh and all their facial expressions. We have today Misty B, a writer, filmmaker, and recovering codependent who writes humorous books about life and recovery, shining some light into normally very dark spaces. Misty's career in entertainment, producing live events, writing and directing for TV, stage, and film, combined with her dysfunctional upbringing, provide the fodder for her gritty but inspiring recovery stories. We have her on today to talk about her new book and her life story. The book is If You Leave Me, Can I Come With You? And by the way, we just heard that it is the number one on the new releases on Amazon in the category of codependency. So, woohoo! Yay. Welcome, Misty!
Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you for having me. It's great.
Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
It is. Yeah. And so it's been released, what, 2 weeks ago?
At the beginning of September. Yeah.
Okay.
So three weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That really feels good, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
You were telling us before we went on air a little bit about how you started with this book, that you had self-published. I mean, I know that's so interesting to people, how to do that. Can you maybe share a little bit about that?
No, I have no idea how to talk about that. Yes, of course I will. I decided to self-publish because I've been in recovery in a 12-step recovery program from the effects of other people's alcoholism and addictions for 6 years. And I have a lot of the meditation books. I'm a self-help, you know, junkie. I've had every book that's been written. I've been to every seminar, everything you can possibly do. And most of them were really a little too precious for me, or
Like serious?
Precious as in, you know, the Stuart Smalley kind of vibe. Just very, you know, you can do it. Or really lofty and spiritually minded that I couldn't always relate to them. Some of them I could, but really what happens to someone like me that has kind of more negative tendencies is it just makes me feel worse.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. And I love to laugh. I wasn't laughing for a long time. It's not as if, you know, I was chuckling while people were dying in my family, but I've always had a warped sense of humor. And even in the midst of pain, I can find something that will make me chuckle a little. And so I decided that I should just start writing these meditations because they didn't exist. And I went through, I did not know what I was doing. That's why when you asked me how did I do it, I'm kind of like, I don't know how I did it. I think it's like the William Goldman, when he says nobody knows anything, it's really the truth. The older I get, the more I discover that. But I just did it by hook or by crook. I wrote the book, designed kind of the cover myself, and then hired an editor, put it out on Amazon, people started reading it. A lot of people in my own recovery community found it inspiring to them because they needed to laugh. We need to laugh. Heal, you know, laughter heals.
Agreed.
So what happened from there was Hazelden, I submitted it to Hazelden. They picked it up and they said, we'd love to publish this book. It's time for something like this. And I said, absolutely.
How fun.
So cool.
That was a year ago today. I mean, not a year ago today, but a year ago last September.
Oh, my God.
Ah, where you got the call from
Hazelden. Yes. Well, I got the call like in August.
Wonderful. And then the ball went rolling.
Yeah. So
can you tell us a little bit about your own personal story? That's what I would love to know and kind of what inspired you to write it.
Sure. So this is more, this is a daily meditation. So the purpose of it is to share my own experiences, strength, and hope on a daily basis. So you get little pieces of me, not that you always want them, but, you know, every day you get a little piece of my experience. And hopefully in a way that's not just self-serving, but it gives other people inspiration and light. But so my story is that I grew up I was the only non-addict in my family. So there was mental illness, alcoholism, drug addiction, every possible kind of, addiction present in my family. And so it's sort of like one person had to come out and try to save everybody, and that was me.
That was you.
So from a very young age, I was trying to save everyone, you know, save my mother from mental illness and alcoholism, she was also suicidal, save my father from marijuana addiction and what I think at this point was very severe narcissism, save my other sister from drug addiction and another sister who had not only a mental and physical disorder, but also had addiction issues. And that was our family.
Surrounded.
Absolutely.
Surrounded. Yeah.
And so I like to say that where I turned was to success and achievement. That became my sort of drug of choice, if you will, was that I was going to get out of it and be something. So I focused most of my energy most of it was really trying to help my family, you know, from a young age, trying to get somebody to get help. Even though I didn't know what help was, I was trying, you know. It was just my nature, I guess. And I did have a higher power in my life. I did have a God as a young person. I don't know where it came from because no one else in my family had. But there was just a sense that there was something more here and that there was something else holding this together, because if there wasn't more, then I was in deep doo-doo.
Right.
So I used my creativity even at a very young age. You know, I tell a story one of how at Christmas time we were so broke and I went around and I started singing Christmas carols, but it really actually wasn't Christmas. It was in July. And my mother found out and she was mortified. And I was like, but I want a skateboard. You know, that was just the kind of kid I was. It's like, go get it. There was just something in me that had a lot of resiliency.
Motivation.
And, you know, I think that's another part of it. It's like resiliency was key for me. Then I got into situations where, you know, I had a lot of success and it was never enough. You know, I'm on the red carpet with so-and-so doing this and this, and it's not enough. It doesn't make my family love me. It doesn't make me a good person.
Yeah.
It doesn't fulfill me. And ultimately, even years of therapy, everything that I did, you know, it all led me to the point where I had to get real with what the problem was. And for me, it was a spiritual hole that I was trying to fill with other people. And that's what codependency is, you know, trying to get someone else to fill myself, depending on other people to make me happy. And so I joined a 12-step program for Al-Anon. And I don't represent the group, but so basically in the last 10 years, every person in my family has died from alcoholism.
I'm sorry.
Every person. Yeah. My mother died in 2005. My sister died in 2011. My father died in 2012. My other sister died four months ago.
Oh,
all from addiction.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
And
that's just horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, tragic.
Yeah, it is.
Tragic.
That's why I feel very committed to bringing hope and inspiration to other people. And I do it in a way with humor, because that's sometimes the only way you can heal.
Yes.
It's the only way I can deal with it at times. It's too much.
Yes.
So I think if there's someone out there that feels they're very alone, because I felt alone for most of my life until I got a community that really understood where I was coming from and how deep the pain of alcoholism and addiction is to the people around them.
Yeah.
And it's not about blaming them. It's just about saying, this is a family disease. It's not just your problem. Mm-hmm. It's my problem, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Wow. Okay. I was curious when you said on the first loss, which you said was your mom. I'm sorry. Did any of the other family members get inspired? Did they like recognize that this is from addiction? And maybe did anybody try to get help at all at that point? No. Just
no.
Total denial.
No. I think, you know, there are people that have the do not have the ability to get really honest with themselves.
Yes.
And I think that that was really the core problem in my family. There was so much denial. It was so deep. So I was the crazy one because I was the one that was like, hey, there's problems here.
Right,
and then, of course, you know, they killed the messenger.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So that was sort of my role. And, this is just how I dealt with it. And for a long time, you know, I thought my stories and my writing and creation is the way that I healed.
Mm-hmm. That's so incredible, though, that I love hearing those stories. It reminds us of our last guest, that, like, you go through all this tragedy, and then you kind of bring light, you know, from all of it. So I think that's wonderful. I really
Absolutely.
Do.
And one of the things I love about your book, aside from the adorable cover, both the self-published cover as well as the published cover, but it's not fair to say self-published and published, right? The the standard publishing house published cover, right? Okay. Anyway, is if you leave me, can I come with you? Is that you don't preach. You're not telling people what to do or how to do it. You're really just sharing your musings of the day and the things that you're learning. So I think it'll be really fun if you're up for it to, there was a couple of my favorites. So I wanted you to read aloud, please, Detachment Issues. So
you got it.
A sense of your writing style.
Okay, great. So this is called Detachment Issues, and this is January 25th. And the setup, just so people know, is I do the meditation, and then at the end I have sort of my thought for the day. You know, in a lot of meditation books, they have thought for the day. My thought for the day is called In Spite of Myself, because I usually get in my own way. So I called this In Spite of Myself is because this is the action I'm going to take, even though I probably don't want to.
Yeah.
So this is called Detachment Issues. Detachment is a word I hear thrown around a lot these days. Detach from difficult people, detach from difficult situations. It's such a cold word. So heartless and devoid of love. So boring. As if being in a relationship and being detached were even a possibility. As if allowing someone to experience the consequences of their actions were humane. Ask any normal person, and they'll tell you what relationships are all about. Bonding, joining together, becoming one, completing each other, merging, forsaking all others, and a myriad of other things. Suppose our forefathers had decided to practice detachment and refused to sign the Bill of Rights or the U.S. Constitution. Even if those guys hadn't stuck together when Thomas Jefferson was crafting the Declaration of Independence, we might still be speaking proper English and eating bangers and mash. Just because some people think detaching is a sign of mental health doesn't mean I have to agree with them. And it definitely doesn't mean I have to do it. Detach, that is. In spite of myself. Letting go of people, places, and things is highly overrated.
I just love that. I mean, I think that there's a saying that I've often heard in 12-step programs is for Al-Anons, detach with love.
Yeah.
Like, how do you do that?
Right? Exactly. What does it mean? It's like,
As a somewhat codependent who sometimes idealizes codependency and sometimes says, probably not so good.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of get stuck on that, on the fence there, because what does it really mean? What is healthy love?
Yeah.
Like, what is a healthy, loving relationship?
Yeah. I say detach with a butter knife or any other sharper objects, but it's difficult, and that's the big process, is how do you do it? Like, love someone, because I only could, like, hate you. If I had to detach from you, you became non-existent to me, or inside I was still wanting that approval.
Sure.
You know, and I don't know that I don't even know if it's possible to totally detach.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something we strive towards, but it's like perfection and recovery. We're never there.
Sure.
But so I just tell stories like that because that's really what my brain says. My brain doesn't go, oh, okay, I'm going to detach now or really do it, because I don't. That's why I have a community of friends that will remind me, what is that again? Because I have amnesia. Every day I forget.
Exactly. You need a reminder. Sure.
Yeah, that was awesome, though. I'm sure that that's helpful to a lot of people, because it is such, it's a big word, detachment. And hard for us as humans who have a lot of compassion and empathy to be able to detach. You know, that's just, it's a big struggle. But I know that that's true in so many situations with addiction, that if you don't pull off, you'll get sucked right in there and they'll take you down. I mean, it's like throwing a bomb on you and trying to hold it and not explode. It just can't happen.
Right. Well, I'm curious in your mind, kind of what is a healthy relationship?
What do you think?
Wow, I have no idea.
She's like, why are you asking me?
Can you tell me? You guys,
I think we're
shrinks.
Supposed to be answering that.
You know, actually, I would say it was funny because somebody asked me the other day. I was on another talk show and they said, you know, you talked about narcissism and, you know, how did you get through it? And now do you have a happy relationship? And I said, of course not. You know, I'm just being a smart aleck. I lighten everything up by a little sarcasm. But I actually am in a healthy relationship for the first time. And yes, he is living and he is breathing. He's not like in another country.
Yeah.
He's here in this town. And, you know, for me, a healthy relationship, and I learn this every day, is everyone has their own path, and I have to allow them to have it. I have to allow them to walk it. I can, you know, and I know this again is like walk beside me, not behind me. Ugh, but it's the truth. It's it's really learning to allow someone the freedom to have their own life and to have the freedom to have my own life without trying to control them or make them who I want them to be. I saw something the other day, and it was something like, you know, marriage and love, real love, is about, you know, sticking together even when it's really tough. And that's not what I meant to say. But the point is, I don't try to turn them into someone they're not. But I don't know that I believe in unconditional love. I've never experienced it. But I will say that there is something like the best I can do love that accepts someone for who they are and allows them to be that. So that's been my biggest.
That's nice. Yeah. Really nice.
Oh. Thanks. Oh, okay.
Good. Like She's it. Like, okay, great.
Maybe I'll write this down and actually try practicing
well,
it.
Well, you can just re-listen to the show. You can record it. And,
exactly.
You can practice it. Okay. But that, you know, that's true. I think that we can love unconditionally, but not necessarily about behavior, right? There's behaviors that we accept or don't accept in our lives because some people's behavior hurts us.
Sure.
And to just continually walk in the line of fire over and over again isn't healthy.
Right.
But I think being able to step back and say, I love you, the person that you are. I just don't want to be, you know, in that arena. I had it's a great example. I was working with a couple a long time ago, and one member of the couple, really try to keep anonymity here, had a very profound tic disorder.
Okay.
And the other member of the couple was begging and pleading for some medication to be taken to be able to help this. They would sit on my couch, and at various times, while they're talking and trying to figure things out, the hand of the one with the tic would start slapping the other one. Not intentionally, but it was this tic, and I could see this unfolding. And at a certain point, the other member of the couple who was being attacked basically said, I love you. I really do. If you will not take care of this condition, I cannot. She was getting bruised. And I mean, at some point, somebody was probably going to call the cops thinking that she was in a domestic violence situation. But it was such a profound visual example of how, there are behaviors that aren't necessarily hitting us every day, but they do affect our ability to.
Well, wait, what happened?
With
you
somebody.
Can't just leave us hanging. I know. I mean,
know.
What are you joking right
up.
Now?
They broke up.
They did.
Yeah.
That makes me sad. I know.
He just, he couldn't take it. She couldn't take it. Yeah. Either one couldn't make the changes to make it work. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. But it was a great example.
That is. That's a really good example.
So, you know, you mentioned narcissism. That's such a big topic. Let's talk a little bit about that because I had certainly had heavy narcissism in my family background. And so tell us some of your experience. And do you have, Coach Kelly, do you have any narcissists in your...
In my family? I do.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes,
you
I definitely
do. Is, but
I cannot say who it is.
You got to have one.
Exactly. Three out of three. That's great.
I cannot say who it is, but I feel like it's almost like to me, and I'm curious your viewpoint, I feel like narcissists don't even realize how, like, they just don't even realize that they have the disorder because they're so involved in them. So
their
this person wouldn't even,
so
oh my God,
huge.
Like he wouldn't even realize it. But it is so difficult to deal with. Like for me, I just like, oh my God, it's, you know, you talk a lot about acceptance too in the book. And I just feel like for me, it's just accepting like this person is not going to change. This is who he is. I'm not going to change him. I can't expect anything from him. And I've just sort of lessened contact. And that's kind of the way that I've dealt with it because it's like, I'm not going to get anything out of this relationship, clearly, you know, it's so, yeah, I'm curious kind of your experience with that.
So, yes, I did grow up with narcissism. And the interesting thing is that, you know, it wasn't labeled. And I think now this is part of some of the things I've been writing about recently is that, you know, everybody labels, like you think because the world is so, everything is so out there on social media that, oh, that person's a narcissist, that person's a narcissist. And that's really an inaccurate. I'm not a mental health person, as you can imagine. But I do know enough about it that most people that are labeled narcissists actually aren't. It is a an extreme personality disorder that a person generally does not heal from. And I did have an experience growing up. My father was a narcissist, and I never had a label for it. So the interesting thing is, the beauty of what's happening now is that we understand things like we didn't say in the 80s and 70s when I was growing up. So now I can understand some of the behavior, but when it was happening, I didn't. And I talk a little bit about some of the experiences I have, which were, for someone who knows a lot about psychology, are kind of typical, you know, the idealization. And I always attracted narcissistic men who also happen to be alcoholics. Doesn't mean the two are hand in hand, but generally, if you have a narcissistic personality, they have often addictions. And their personality styles, they're really forward and aggressive. They want everything right now. They meet you, in 2 weeks they're in love with you. And for a codependent, that's beautiful, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
They love me. They think I'm amazing. Right. There was a healthy part of me that always knew, no, this isn't right. Go slow. But you get swept up in it. So that's, and the thing is that it's not even love. It's that they can't, they just need somebody to fixate on and to love them and give them that attention. But
so they love your idealization of them, right? Because they're up on the pedestal, they're in heaven. That's exactly where
they want
to
be.
It's when you start to notice something, or you have a criticism of them, or, oh, could you do it this way? Whoa.
Yes.
You know, that's when the rage often comes out.
Is it that they're deeply insecure? Is that like really what kind of the root of it, do you think?
Well, the story is that the core of a narcissist is incredibly depressed, insecure, shame-based, etc., and that the deeper those injuries, if you will, to the self, the thicker the armor becomes in the narcissistic personality disorder. It's really, it's like a gateway to keep somebody, you know, just a sealed off gate to the inner self. So they really have no conscious cognition anymore of that level of insecurity. So it's like almost the entire reverse. Is that what your experience was?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it was pretty severe, to be honest with you. I will, for example, you know, my father would promise things, you know, like, we're going to go here and there and do this X, Y, and Z. And I would believe it. And then I would say, aren't we going to go here, there, and X, Y, and Z? And he'd say, I never said that.
Oh, then that too.
Classic. Classic example. Even with my college, you know, I planned to go to college, and I got to the point where it was time to go to college, and I was, you know, working, and I said, okay, so I'm applying to that college. And he said, I never said you could go to that college.
Oh, dear.
I mean, so you are completely thinking you've lost your mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, I accepted blame for things that weren't my fault. You know, as he missed the airplane, so he missed the flight to go see his mother, and she died. And because I had organized the tickets and he missed it,
it was your fault.
It was my fault. And I carried that, you know, blame for years. So I just felt like there's just so much craziness, but I didn't know what it was. And so I carried a lot of it. And it's only been through like the last few years that I've really understood that he really was not necessarily given the label, but all of the characteristics, you know, the deep shame, that not letting anyone know them, the anger and the rage and living around it, the gaslighting, the telling you one thing, doing something else. And it was pretty severe. So I like to tell people, you know, a lot of times what we see today is not real narcissism. When you're with a real narcissist, you know it.
Exactly.
It is so deeply painful, and you can't grab. There's nothing. Alcoholism, I can see. I can't see narcissism. I don't know where to put it. And as a kid, you just assume you're the problem.
Well, I would think for you too, growing up so close to that, like, it almost feels familiar being around a partner, because that's what you know. It doesn't, you can't kind of see it as, you know, an issue or a problem. So,
and I think it helps to think of narcissism as on a spectrum or a continuum. So when people say, yeah, he's a narcissist, well, there's a difference between somebody who's self-absorbed, particularly if it's situational, versus somebody who's chronically depleted of the capacity for empathy, and literally, no matter what, no matter with whom, no matter when, they will be unable to put themselves in your shoes to understand how you're feeling.
So
it doesn't mean that they don't expect everybody else to totally empathize with their feelings.
Right.
But inevitably, it gets turned back to them. So like my mom's classic thing, which she would say, well, how are you? And I would say, well, I'm doing pretty good, but, you know, this is what's going on. Do you think that's going on in your life? Oh my gosh. Let me tell you what's going on in mine. Yeah. Okay, Mom, why don't you just talk?
Yeah, exactly.
Because you really don't care about what I have to say or what's going on. All it's going to do is be that she was a polite narcissist. Mm-hmm. So it was the sounding board for when she could dive in with her own
stuff.
Woes and how the world is unkind to her and needs to help her and her victimization and and the entitlement and all that.
Oh my God, so, that's so hard.
You know, and the interesting thing is... On a different note, I, you know, part of what I had to do in my own work, my own recovery, was recognize some of those tendencies in myself. So because I grew up around people that were entitled and total victims about everything, I have that tendency to go there. And mm-hmm. I had to really look at that mm-hmm. within myself and go, wow, I have this attitude of the man's trying to keep me down or, you know, fight the power. Like, that is part of what I think. And I can go there very quickly.
Yeah,
I can become a victim very quickly. And I have to be constantly on watch for that, you know, and constantly aware of how I'm treating other people, because when you grow up with those patterns for so long, they're just like
ingrained.
Second nature.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I think that's great. I love your self-awareness.
Yeah, really magnificent.
I think Stuart Smalley is like, no, I think that's great. I think that's awesome.
Anytime we can look at ourselves and have a sense of humor so we can make room for actually seeing what's in front of us, mm-hmm. it's amazing. I mean, it only helps us grow and become better people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, too, when you're really honest about yourself, it makes other people honest. Mm-hmm. I really believe that it's contagious. You know, it's like
narcissist, that's often the trap, right? Those same rules do not apply when you're with somebody with a severe personality disorder. And for those of you who, we say this word personality disorder, we know what that means. Many people think, well, he doesn't have a bad personality. He has a good personality. It has mm-hmm. nothing to do with a good or bad personality. It has to do with having a rigid style of behaving across person, place, and time that is immovable regardless of the situation. So a non-true narcissist in a situation mm-hmm. might become very self-absorbed and very self-survivalist because the situation mm-hmm. requires that, but then they can step back later on saying, I did that because, but what I really feel is this, or what I really want to express to myself or to you is something softer and kinder. So that's the rub. That's why a lot of people get confused about what's a personality disorder versus somebody just having, you know, a quirk in their personality.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sorry that you had to endure so much of that, but it does sound like you really have that resiliency mm-hmm. and that ability to look at things in a way that helps you stay on path and mm-hmm. to grow mm-hmm. instead of to get taken down.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, we have to, or I guess I hope that my thing is that I'm here for a short time and mm-hmm. I have to look at what's in front of me. I just don't think there's any other way for me to be. What I mean?
Yeah.
I think it was just how the cards were dealt and I had to be the one to be honest with myself.
Yeah,
there were no other options. So
we had an email come in this last week knowing that you were going to be on the show. So I'd love to read that aloud and have you chime in.
Okay.
So dear Dr. D and Coach Kelly and your guest, I always want to say Mitzi, and it's Misty. Misty.
She's like an old Jewish woman.
You know, it's so funny. Mitzi. I have an aunt who, like, an aunt who still calls me Mitzi.
Shut up.
She's my aunt.
So funny. I love it.
You know how when you first read something, and that's what was indelible now in my brain, and I have to keep correcting myself to not say that, so I'll get it. Misty. Okay. All right. I saw that you are doing a show on codependency this week. Many people have accused me of being codependent, but I really don't even know what that means. I think I'm just a very giving and generous person with my time and energy, although it's true that I sometimes take better care of others than of myself. Can you help me understand what codependency really means? I've been in a relationship for 7 years, and we do most things together, except when we go off to work. Is that unhealthy to spend so much time together? Neither of us complain about it or have much desire to do things separately. I don't really like labels. Can you help me figure this out? Signed, confused.
I don't like labels, but what does this mean?
Yeah.
Like, what can you label me as?
So, you want to chime in?
Oh, sure. So, let's see. Codependency is, you know, it's one of those words that became really popular for a long time and then it had no meaning anymore. And for me, it just, I think so few people really understand it. I'm not saying I do, but in my experience, it's anytime I look at another person or a situation, a thing or even a, like it can be a place, a town, a job, mm-hmm. to make me happy or fulfill me outside of myself, that is codependency. Anytime I'm looking outside myself and my own personal spirituality to heal me or to make me happy or to affect my change in my life, that's codependency. So I'm depending on someone outside myself to make me happy. The other part of it is, for me, is it can be things. So you can be codependent on your job, which I definitely was. Okay. You can be codependent on a political system. You can be codependent on a group, a 12-step group. I mean, you can be, we as humans want interaction and independence, but when the person or other things matter more than your own sense of self, mm-hmm. then that's codependency. And then lastly, I think for me, in terms of codependency, is when my happiness is involved with someone else, as in maybe trying to change them or help them, mm-hmm. make them better. Mm-hmm. In this letter, what I hear is that this person thinks they're giving and loving, and I'm sure that they are. All codependents are. The question I would have for myself, if I were asking this question, would be, what is my motivation? So if I'm being giving and loving, and at the end of it, it's because, I'll give you an example in my own life. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to help someone I know get to a meeting because I know they need it and they don't want to go. Right. But I'm really helping them.
Right.
It's sure. none of my business. If they're going to go, they're going to go. If this person gets that job, they'll get the job. But my wanting to help goes overboard. I don't always know when to stop. And mm-hmm. I have to constantly be going, okay, is this in my, we call it in your own hula hoop. If there's no question at the end of the sentence, if my name's not involved, generally my opinion probably isn't wanted. And I'm big on giving my opinion. And what I'm learning is that unless someone asks for it, if they ask for my help, I am so happy to give it. But if they don't ask for my help, it's probably not healthy to be giving them help.
Sure.
You reminded me of something. I had a relationship with somebody who was a recovering alcoholic, and he drove me insane. I mean, he literally drove me insane. And he had been 4 years clean and sober. Well, not entirely clean and sober, but pretty close. Anyway, so he suggested that I go to Al-Anon, given my family mm-hmm. history. It seemed like a good idea. And I found, it's so funny, I found this woman to be my sponsor, and she was French, and she was very, very stern. And she would say to me, she'd say, "Debra, I fail to hear the question. I fail to hear the question. If you have a question, I will answer it. If you're just going to blabber, I have nothing to say." Turns out she was quite the narcissist.
It was
hysterical. And it was like, but that, you know what? It was good because it really, I mean, is not so kind. As she was not such a warm fuzzy person, which I think I would have heard it better. Mm-hmm. But there was something that really stuck with me about that, that when people would just share a whole bunch of stuff, my tendency to want to jump in and help.
Yes.
Did anybody ask for my help? No.
It's so true.
So I would have to learn to back off. You know, and I wanted to add to, I love your response to this email. It's awesome. I would also say that I think a lot of times people do, whether she's codependent or not, there's probably not enough information here to really know, but people often confuse time spent as being a direct correlate to codependency. Mm-hmm. You can have people who spend all day long together. They work together. They do stuff together, but they're not codependent because, just like you were saying, Misty, that they don't rely on the other to make themselves happy. Yeah. They just happen to be able to coexist because they get along so well, they're good companions, etc. Mm-hmm. You could spend very little time with somebody and be extremely codependent, as in somebody who, let's say, travels for work and you're sitting at home and, you know, you're at the phone 24/7
because
you can't breathe not knowing if they're breathing, you know, in front of you. So it's not necessarily just because they spend a lot of time together and they're not bothered by it, may not be anything unhealthy there. How about you, Coach?
It's so funny. I'm thinking while you guys are talking about codependence, I'm like, I might be codependent on my dog.
Oh, I know. That's for sure.
I like am obsessed with this guy.
The joke is that her dog, Moose, was born out of her vagina, not her children.
My only vaginal birth.
Yes.
And the other, I'm not kidding. Love this dog. And so while you're thinking, I'm like, God, it's so funny. No, I wholeheartedly agree with everything you both said. I mean, I guess my question is, like, does she feel like what she's doing is too much. Like, is she giving too much? Is she, extending too much? Because I didn't hear that in the email. It wasn't like a problem. It was like, I'm enjoying this. Like, I didn't hear any pain of like, when he goes away, I'm going nuts. You know, I think it's more of like, hey, somebody said this to me. The question is, am I, you know? And it's sort of like, if she's not hurting, if she's not feeling like he's saying you're on me too much, like, I don't think there's a true issue.
Right. And I'd also be really curious as to who were the messengers of codependency.
Yes.
Who are the people who are telling her she is? Because there's very possible that some of her friends are single. They don't have a good relationship.
True.
They haven't had one. They might be envious. They might be jealous. Oh, you're codependent. But really what they're seeing is a beautiful couple who's in love and who likes to share time and space together. So, you know, I think the jury's out. And I think we'll just say, maybe just go explore more for yourself in terms of how you feel and are. Do you think it's a healthy relationship?
Yeah, I think that's a great piece of advice. Yeah,
I'm in agreement.
I'm curious about the codependent policeman. It's like, you're, you know what I mean? Like, when you said that, it's like, who are these people? I imagine like little suits, like codependent, you know.
Do you have a good codependency story, Coach Kelly?
No, but I'm thinking I'm codependent myself as you're talking. I'm like, oh my God, when my husband travels, am I kind of waiting by the phone? And like, I'm like, oh my God. You know, I'm going to guess there's just different levels of, you know, really missing somebody or, you know, I mean, and I think in any relationship, of course, like you're sort of, you know, in some ways looking for that person to make you happy, to fulfill you. But I guess there's just different levels where you feel like you're completely dependent on them versus, you know, I don't know. What's your thought about that?
Well, step in.
Do you mind if I... Okay. So
please.
One thought that I had when you said that is...
Yeah.
When I discovered this whole thing about codependency, I did not act like the typical codependent, which we have the typical...
Yeah.
Which is the... I don't know if you guys remember those commercials a long time ago where the drunk guy's in the car and the wife's running after him and going, don't take the car, you'll kill yourself.
Oh, yes.
Because he's drunk.
Yeah.
That's not me, and that's not how I related to codependency. So I think sometimes we kind of... explain it in a way that it makes people think, well, there's still something about me that's off. And so I just wanted to explain maybe a little bit of my experience with codependency, if it'll help. I was not dependent on other people in the way that you typically think. I was not going, you know, where is he? What is he doing?
Yeah.
I was the opposite. I think I had a tendency to not be dependent, to be anti-dependent. So in my head, all this stuff was going on, but I never expressed it.
Mm-hmm.
So people I was in a relationship with would think I really didn't care because I wasn't saying those things like, where are you? But in my mind, I was churning.
Mm.
You know, I dream about their problems, and I'm not joking. I would dream about other people's problems.
Yeah.
Even this morning, I was talking to the man I'm in a relationship with, and I was like, you know what? I'm just a little scared about this aspect of things, and I'm so sorry because I feel like I'm putting it on you, and it's not you. It's me. I'm just feeling scared about this.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out really nicely. But the point that I make is that my codependency was on like things, like success and achievement.
Oh, I see.
That's where my focus was. It doesn't always have to be people, and you don't always have to be that clingy Vine.
Yes,
you can be, come off as looking independent and got it together, but inside it's that constant churning in your head. Like, what if it's not enough? How can I do? So I think there are a lot of codependents that don't relate to that, but they relate to this. So
Absolutely.
If that helps.
Makes sense. Sure.
And I was thinking too, as you were saying, I think our culture does people a disservice in music and movies, in the sense of the lyrics are, if you don't be with me, I'll die without you.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of that kind of, you know, I have to have you, that we then consider to be romance, that we consider that that's true love.
Exactly.
That's
true.
So if you don't have a guy who's willing to slice his head off for you,
exactly,
if you don't want to be with
him,
you're
going to say nuts.
Yeah. I was debating which end of the body spectrum.
I was like, it's going pretty far, Dr. D. It's so funny, but
so then we get confused. I mean, I remember growing up, and most of the songs that I would listen to, and I would cry over it, just sobbing.
Yes.
These just, they're horrible.
Yes, exactly. Well, I imagine, remember the movie Say Anything, and he's like got the boom box for the woman. He's like, come on, like, I don't know, you look at him, blank face. It was like an 80s movie like this guy was like in love with this girl, and he like, you know, really wanted her, and he like comes to her window with like this big boom box and that famous song, and you know, but yeah, to your point, exactly.
Serendipity was that one for me with John Cusack and Kate Beckinsale.
Yes.
Oh, she's beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, I have to see these.
Oh, God. Yeah. It's so, but it's such
it's the same, it's the same thought. But hey, that makes for good ratings and, yeah. you know, gets you into it. But you're right. But I think it
right.
instills this feeling that that's what we have to do.
Sure. And I think just on a little bit more of a serious note, too, that people who really struggle with abuse in their background, mistreatment, mm-hmm. abandonment, and carry forward abandonment issues in their lives are much more likely to see relationships as their rescue.
Yes.
That somebody else outside of them, because mm-hmm. the people who were supposed to fill mm-hmm. them up internally when mm-hmm. they were little mm-hmm. didn't. And so that aching, gnawing mm-hmm. feeling of, well, I'm searching forever for that right person to come and give that to me.
Yeah.
Sadly, those are the people who generally, like myself and you probably, and you at times, draw in the narcissists, draw in the ones who are going to mistreat mm-hmm. us again, because we recreate those old wounds, hoping for that vindication moment that yes. somehow I'm going to get mm-hmm. this one to turn around and prove sure. how valuable and lovable I really am. And it's a dead end street. So if anybody's caught in that, mm-hmm. it's a dead end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be careful when it feels, I tell myself, you know, just be careful when it feels too rushed and it seems like this person's the answer to everything, because no one ever is. And I still struggle with it every day. The answer mm-hmm. is when the book hits number one. The answer is when this happens.
Yeah.
The answer, there's always something outside myself.
Although you're pretty excited that you
hit
that number
one. I know, exactly. Day. No, but I agree yeah. with you. It is so true.
Always.
It's like, yeah. I call it like the big kahuna. Like if I just got this one thing, you know, I'd be happy. And exactly. yeah.
Wow.
So
we are running out of time.
I know. Yeah. Oh my God, this is so interesting.
So much fun. Cool.
So much fun. So much fun. So give us, okay, so the book is If You Leave Me, Can I Come With You? Daily Meditations for Codependence and Al-Anons with a Sense of Humor by Misty B. And I know that you have to keep your last name anonymous because that's part of the program right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes,
so,
it is.
Yes. So tell us some parting words. Okay. Give us some more words of wisdom.
Oh, gosh.
I know. So, no pressure.
No pressure.
No pressure at all. Well, you know, I would just say that if you know, my goal is to give people hope and inspiration, and the book is really my struggles. You know, I mean, I talk about a point in the book where I'm literally suicidal. So mm-hmm. it's not as if this is all yucks, but it's the truth is that life is hard. It's just hard, and if you don't have a sense of humor and you cannot, sometimes you just can't do it alone. And so I really honestly wrote this book for a person who's struggling with this and doesn't necessarily know where to turn mm-hmm. and just feels like they need some hope and inspiration, and that they'll get that from this and from my stories, or at least, you know, a laugh, and just feel like somebody understands them. And I think if that's all that happens, that's what it was meant to be. And I've done my service and I'm happy nice. With that.
Well, you are a beautiful, beautiful woman, and we're so glad that you are on the show, and so much fun.
Thank you.
So much
I had fun. A great time,
yes,
you guys.
So
I want to come back. Can I come back tomorrow?
Yeah, exactly.
and then
can I leave the studio with you?
Yes,
if
yes,
leaving,
yes.
Can
yes
I
if I leave, will you come with me?
Yes.
That's
yes.
my next book. If I leave, will you come with me?
That's very funny.
And one last thing. If you want to check yes. out the book or yeah. go on to Amazon, and it's If You Leave Me, Can I Come With You? Or
and you have a website.
I have a website.
Yes. What is
and
it?
It's Misty B. Writes. My name is spelled M-I-S-T-I. B as in boy. Writes as in the pen. MistyBWrites.com. And, you know, send me an email. Say hi to me. Let me know how you're doing, and I will always answer it.
Yay.
Okay?
So nice.
That was awesome.
Thanks, ladies.
Okay.
Yes, thank you so much.
Yeah. So next week, we misspoke last time.
I know.
Next week, we have Sonia... What's your last name?
Oh my God, it's either Fitzpatrick.
Fitzpatrick.
Or Fitzgerald. But I think it's Fitzpatrick. She's the animal pet psychic on Sirius XM.
Oh, awesome.
So, and it's so funny because I've been thinking, well, I don't even know if I should say it, but because I want to see if she'll say it. But I have some questions about my dog, and I'm curious if she's going to pick up on it.
Yep.
So it'll be really cool to see that.
I know. I have so many questions.
Yeah.
I don't know if she knows anything about past pets also.
Yes, she absolutely does. Absolutely.
Okay.
So it'll be really cool.
Because I want them all to get along.
I know. Up in heaven, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
My
that's...
two kitties meet my last previous two kitties. I want them to be one big happy family because I'm not codependent and I can control everything. Right?
So true.
Okay. So, hey, listeners, thank you so much. We want you to visit our website because our website for the show is awesome.
Yes. From there, you can go to our personal page, get our books, have a great time.
Absolutely. Yeah, okay, thank you so much for listening. Till next time.
Bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.